Thanks, Isabel, and good morning. It's great to be here to worship together and for a few minutes to reflect on these two short verses where Jesus confronts a very real, practical issue and encourages his hearers to think about their actions and the consequence of their actions in the context of the marriage relationship. But before we start looking at this, I just want to recognise, as Isabel has just done, that this can be a very personal, a painful subject for people. And it affects people in every context. It affects people in this room this morning. And so if what I say and this reflection brings up difficult memories or causes problems, I'm sorry for that. Please do come and talk with me, talk with a friend, so that we can journey together through these difficulties. Over the years, I've had people get in touch with me and say, my marriage is breaking down. Can you come and talk with us? And in some cases, I've had the opportunity to journey with them, and they found that their marriage is retrievable, that they can put things back together, that they can start again. And I can look back and see people together today who years ago were thinking it was all over. I've also had the much more difficult task of journeying with people where the best outcome is realizing that that relationship has come to an end and separation is the only option, and a very, very painful process. This is difficult. This is complex. This is real. This is personal. So let's recognize that and be there for those who are finding these things hard. And Jesus, here in these verses, he does speak about it. And he picks up on what we were talking about last week. And we see once again, as we were reflecting last week, the particular position that men held in that society, with Jesus presenting them here as those with the power to initiate divorce proceedings. And we'll get on to think about that and why that was the case. How that was true in the context that Jesus was living in, how they speak into our situation today. But before we do that, I just wanted to point out something that I noticed when I was looking at these two verses that I don't think I'd noticed before. And I think it's something that encourages us to reflect, to be reflective people. The Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5-7, is made up of lots of short sections, with each of them focusing on different aspects of what it means to live as followers of Jesus. And in many of them, Jesus clearly spells out what he expects his followers to do, how he expects them to behave. So last week, for example, when we were thinking about Jesus' warning about inappropriate and lustful thoughts, he commands people in very powerful language, tear your eye out, cut your hand off, to get rid of anything that would cause them to stumble. In our section for next week, where we're thinking about the importance of speaking the truth, Jesus makes it clear what he expects of his followers and how they should speak. He tells them what they should do. But that is not the case in this short section, in these two verses. There are no commanding or telling verbs, rather an invitation to think about the consequences of our actions, to take other people, in this case our spouses, into account before taking a particular step. And it's true in the context of marriage, it's true in every aspect of our relationships and the things that we do and the people we spend time with, to actually be prepared to reflect and to think, what is this action that I am planning to take? What impact is it going to have on those who are near to me, those whom I love, my friends. A good practice to get into the habit of. Now, it's not to say that Jesus did not have things to say about the practice of divorce. Elsewhere, such as in Mark 10, verse 9, he does speak out against it. But that is not his focus here. At this particular point, Jesus is not telling people how to behave. He's encouraging them to think, to reflect. And sometimes that can be a really powerful way of engaging with others. Not to try and tell them what to do, but to encourage them to think carefully, guided by the Bible, guided by the Spirit of God, about what they're planning, what they're thinking about, and the impact that it will have on others. But what's going on? What's the context into which Jesus is speaking? There seems to have been a recognition from early on in the lives of the people of Israel that marriage relationships would break down, and that would need to be the opportunity for people in some way to separate and to start new lives apart. And Moses speaks about this towards the end of Deuteronomy. He says, when this happens, this is some of the things you should do. You can find this in chapter 24, verse 1 to 4, where again, the power to divorce was clearly with the man. And the basis for divorce, being a very poorly understood, by which I mean we really don't know what it meant, a statement that said the wife had become displeasing to the husband due to something indecent about her. We don't really know what that meant. There are ideas. By the time of Jesus, the picture is less obvious. Clearly, what Jesus is saying here is focused on the man, which might make us assume that it's still something that only men can do. But in Mark 10, 12, Jesus speaks about a woman choosing to divorce her husband. And there are various pieces of historical and archaeological evidence of the time of women divorcing their husbands. But the most common scenario was husbands in that position of power and authority choosing to divorce their wives. This something indecent thing, as I say, we don't really know what it meant. It probably wasn't adultery, because as we saw last week, the punishment for that was death. It was seen as a capital offence. By the time of Jesus, the reasons required for divorce were much more general, with different men suggesting that valid reasons were, these are true reasons that they were talking about at the time, okay? The wife spoiling her husband's food. The husband finding someone who is more attractive to him. The husband not being pleased with her behaviour. The wife not doing as she was told. You get the idea. It was a very unbalanced situation. It was precarious. It was an uncertain position for Jewish wives to be in. And a little later on in Matthew's gospel, I think we see this summed up when religious leaders come to Jesus and ask him a question. Is it lawful, they say, for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Is it okay, they're saying. Somebody I used to work with some time ago shared with me that he was planning to separate from his wife. And I was trying to understand why and say, what's going on? And he said, well, she doesn't make me happy anymore. That was his reason. Many different reasons that people get to this point. But sometimes people get to this point where there is so much harm and damage in relationship that they have no choice but to leave. And we see that in cases of abuse and so on. There's a wide spectrum of what is going on. And I think what Jesus is doing here is trying to put things back onto a proper basis and ensure that people only seek to divorce their spouses when the spouse has behaved in a way that effectively ends the marriage anyway. So once again, we see Jesus speaking out to defend the women in his society who had very little legal standing or the ability to defend themselves. And he's not particularly focusing on the question of remarriage after a valid divorce. In his culture, It was totally understood by everyone that the act of divorce carried with it the right to remarry. It was written on the divorce certificate. It was part of the deal. What he is arguing for his followers, is that unless the divorce has happened for valid reasons, and the reason he cites is sexual immorality, then it is not valid. Whatever that piece of paper says, and the marriage is still in place in the sight of God. Therefore, starting a relationship with someone else, marrying again, will inevitably result in adultery, based on the meaning of adultery we were thinking about last week. And so Jesus is doing a number of things. He's reaffirming the importance and value of marriage, something that God instituted as a way for people to live together in good and beneficial relationship, something to be protected and preserved wherever possible. He is recognizing that there are situations where marriages will break down. And while this is not God's ideal, there will be times when it is right for people to separate. He is seeking to protect those who are the most vulnerable in society and to be a voice for them when they might find it difficult for their voice to be heard. And these are all things that are good for us to get behind, to recognise, to value, and to support. But how do we take these words of Jesus and apply them in our context? Is that all Jesus has to say about the subject? Is the condition he mentions here the only valid reason for divorce, or are there others that we should recognise? Do other New Testament writers say anything about this? And it's important to recognise that these are questions that Christians have wrestled with since the time of Jesus, with different people, different groups coming to different answers on them. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't explore it, so we're going to do that briefly. And I'd be amazed if everybody here agrees with everything I'm going to say. And if you don't, please come and talk with me and we can work through that together. But I also want to recognise that this is not just a theoretical discussion for me. I remember the time when my youngest son, Dave, who was here with his wife, Natalie, just a few weeks ago, and many of you met, when he asked me whether it might be right at some stage for him to think about marrying again after his marriage with his first wife had ended, after she had left him. A difficult question to hear as he journeyed through that very, very difficult time. I did check with him, it was okay to share some of this. It wasn't that at that point it was somebody he had in mind, but as somebody who'd experienced great hurt, but as also somebody who had a deep desire to be obedient to Jesus, he wanted some help in working through the question. At some point in the future, if I get to that point, what's the Bible got to say about this? I wanted to honour that request and work with him through that. But as a parent, seeing what he was going through, I wanted all that was best for him. When things strike close to home, as this did, and as this situation does, our natural inclination is to protect those we love and seek what is best for them. Might not be, or it might be, the best time to try and work out what the Bible says about something. But it does remind us that when we are seeking to understand the Bible's teaching in a certain area, our conclusions are often not just theoretical. They affect life. They have an impact on how we behave, how we act towards others. So what does Jesus say? It's one of those things, again, that he does not talk about much.
He mentions marry or marriage less than 20 times. He mentions divorce 10 times. In Matthew's gospel, when speaking about this question, divorce and remarriage, Jesus recognizes unfaithfulness as a valid reason for this to happen. We've just seen that. In Mark and Luke's gospel, when Jesus speaks about the same subject, he doesn't even speak about an exception clause. He doesn't say, it's okay if this has happened. He just says simply, like in Mark 10, anyone who divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. And we could look at this and say, well, that's a blanket statement. That's clear, and that's what we understand, and that's what we can base things on. But in the context of his day, his hearers would have understood that what Jesus was doing was stating a general principle, and that there were times when such sayings needed to be qualified. They would have understood that. And so when what we see in Matthew is said, that would have been sort of what people were expecting. What is the qualification here? What is the exception? And we see this in general sayings throughout the Bible, like Proverbs, where words like Proverbs, where they intended to convey the norm, but not to say that what they're saying is always going to be the case. So Proverbs 10, verse 3, the Lord does not let the righteous go hungry. Sometimes the righteous do go hungry. Psalm 92, the righteous will flourish like a palm tree. Sometimes this does not happen. Proverbs 9, through wisdom, your days will be many and years will be added to your life. Again, this does not always happen. And these proverbial sayings are to be recognized for what they are. Words that speak about how things should be. What is God's ideal? But not how they always are as we live in a broken and troubled world. And so in Matthew, Jesus spells out a basis for a valid divorce to take place. But that is not where the New Testament leaves it. There are two other insights that I want us to reflect on this morning. There's one very specific, talking specifically about this question, and one that is more general that I think has some really important things to say to us. The very specific one is in 1 Corinthians 7, where Paul says this, but if the unbeliever leaves, let it be so. The brother or the sister is not bound in such circumstances. And God has called us to live in peace. In this chapter, 1 Corinthians 7, Paul is addressing many, many different questions about marriage. And towards the end of the chapter, he addresses the particular situation of a non-believing spouse choosing to leave a believer. So the situation is this. You've got two people who are married. One of them comes to believe in Jesus and is committed to following Jesus. The other does not. Earlier in the letter, Paul makes clear that the believer who has an unbelieving spouse, that's not a reason to leave. Rather, Paul points out the positive impact that the believer can have on their spouse and the hope of bringing them to a point of knowing Jesus as well. But now he thinks about the other situation, where the non-believer has decided for whatever reason that they can no longer continue in this relationship. And in that situation, the believing spouse is free to become divorced, to accept that divorce that this non-believing spouse will want. And so what Paul is doing here, he's introducing another reason, in addition to adultery, where divorce is to be permitted. And he doesn't say anything about remarriage in his context, that's not his focus. And this has developed over the centuries, as Christians experience different and often challenging situations and recognized other bases for divorce as well. And here I want to come onto the wider principle. So In Matthew 12, the beginning of Matthew 12, Jesus is engaging with the religious leaders in one of the disputes that frequently came up. Jesus seemed to spend a lot of time discussing and debating and arguing with other religious leaders. And in verse 7, he reminds them of God's desire for his people to put mercy before sacrifice. He challenges them about doing things, about acting in a way that would condemn the innocent. And here we see the heart of Jesus for those who are innocent. And in this context, the call to not condemn people in a difficult or dangerous relationship to stay with their abusive partner. And again, debating with the Pharisees in Matthew 23, Jesus recognizes they've kept some of the details of God's law, but challenges them for ignoring the things he describes as more important. Justice, mercy, faithfulness. Yes, God's ideal for the marriage relationship is that it is permanent and unbroken. But he also wants people to be able to live in just and healthy relationships. And sometimes we need to recognize that this is no longer possible. Jesus spoke about the importance of marriage. We should do the same. But we should also be willing to extend mercy and grace to those who find themselves having to leave difficult relationships, as opposed to encouraging them to stay when that is clearly the wrong thing, or adding a sense of guilt to what they have been through. That is so far removed from what I believe we should be doing. Marriage is an important and precious thing, something we should cherish, something we should defend to the best of our ability and with God's help. But we also need to recognize that marriages do sometimes break down. And we are called to journey with and support those who find themselves in such situations, particularly those who are seen to be the innocent party, although we may not always know who that is in any particular case. We don't know where that journey will take people. We don't know the demands it might make on us as we journey with them. But when we have the privilege of walking with those who have often experienced deep pain and loss, let's recognize that privilege. Let's seek to bring the light and love of Jesus into that situation. Picking up on what I mentioned about Dave and the breakdown of his first marriage, he went through some difficult times. We walked through some of those times with him as we sought to encourage, support, and be there for him. Many others came alongside him and were there for him in many different ways. I did answer his question. And then just over 5 years ago, in June 2017, I had the privilege of taking part in Dave and Natalie's wedding, leading them through their vows of commitment to each other. A time of joy, a time of celebration, an opportunity for new beginnings. And one of the things that people can experience when they know that they're in the midst of something that is unhelpful and damaging, and sometimes abusive, is that they can feel that even if they leave, even if in some cases they escape, all hope is lost. But I think one of the messages that Jesus wants to bring into people's lives is that that is never the case. There is always hope. There is always possibility. There is always a way forward into new and joyful opportunities that God has for people. God does not give up on us when things get hard. God continues to love us and be there for us. And as God's people, We have that amazing privilege of doing the same for those who are finding life difficult and challenging, and to be there and to support them, and to bring the light of Jesus into that situation and say, even in this, there is hope. There is a way forward. Here are some questions to think about. In this passage, Jesus calls us to consider the impact on those near to us before we act. How much do we do this? In 2020, 42% of marriages in the UK ended in divorce. That's a frightening statistic. What can we do to support those who are married? How can we be salt and light to those who are having real difficulties in marriage, to those who have been divorced? Think about our actions. Think about the reality of the situation. How do we live out that call to be salt and light? I'll leave you to think about those questions for a moment, and then we're going to come and sing one final song.